The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Tensions between Ireland and the United Kingdom have grown in recent times. Last week on the show, we covered comments made by Taoiseach Micheál Martin, who said that Ireland would not be a loophole for the UK's Rwanda policy scheme. However, the question over what to do with the number of migrants coming from Northern Ireland remains a point of contention. Over the weekend, a poll from the Sunday Times revealed that 50% of people would be in favour of having checkpoints at the border. Joining me now in studio to talk about this is Professor John O'Brien, Professor of European Politics at Maynooth University, and on the line, Professor Deirdre Heenan, Professor of Social Policy at Ulster University. Good morning and welcome to you both. John, first of all, this figure that people, 50% of people would be happy to have border controls. I mean, they're talking about immigrant controls, but if you do that, you're doing everything, aren't you?
Yeah. I think we should be deeply suspicious of this poll. Any poll that's taken in the moment of great political controversy, and this row between the UK and Ireland went on basically all through that period when the poll was being conducted. I think we have to be very suspicious of it, Pat. I mean, if you actually begin to nuance that question and you point out to people the problems that occur as a result of taking that kind of action, then I think you get a very different kind of answer from your respondents.
But as politicians who are on the wrong end of a poll will always tell you, this is just a snapshot in time. And when the election comes, it'll all be different. Isn't that what polls do? They tell you the mood of the people when the poll is
taken. At a particular moment. And it's very clear that emigration has risen so much up the ranking or the hierarchy of issues that people have, that it kind of supersedes everything. And that's, I think, why you got the answer that you got it to the question that was framed in that particular way.
Deirdre, what was your reaction when you saw those figures?
Well, I think any academic worth their salt would say, when was this poll taken? Who was it taken by? And how was the question framed? And all of that would suggest that it was a fairly leading question in a time where tensions had been raised. And I think, yes, we shouldn't pay much attention to the poll, but we should not ignore the fact that immigration has risen up the policy agenda, both in the Republic of Ireland and the UK. And the question is why tensions between Dublin and London over immigration are a reminder, in my opinion, that Anglo-Irish relations post-Brexit are fragile.
When you say they're fragile, it's because the United Kingdom is outside the European Union. I mean, things that we took for granted are no longer so. And we have this fudge, which has come about where we still have open borders, but they're not really that open because there will be checks, particularly from goods leaving the Republic and going into the United Kingdom.
Well, look, we've argued about an Irish border for the last 6 years. I think what we are seeing here, both in the UK and the Republic of Ireland, is an abject failure of systems that were supposed to deal with asylum. And politicking and weaponising the border is just simply reckless. The idea that Ireland can identify those who came from the UK and send them back to Britain is as ludicrous as sending migrants to Rwanda. The Home Office in the UK say that they cannot locate 60% of migrants identified for deportation. What I would worry about is the dehumanising language, the rhetoric used around migrants, about Brexit Britain, normalising hatred and far-right language. You know, I would be particularly worried about conversations that I have heard this week saying, you know, migrants have put an intolerable strain on our public services. I know in Northern Ireland, for example, that far from putting an intolerable strain on the National Health Service, for example, it's migrants that are keeping the National Health Service afloat.
And the ministers here, both the Taoiseach and the Minister for Justice, have made that point very clearly. Yep. Go into any hospital, a large hospital in the Republic of Ireland, and you'll find many doctors and nurses are from all over the world. But people will say, look, these are the people who come in on a visa, the people who have a job to go to, who have skills that the economy needs. We are getting people coming in who have no skills that are marketable in this economy and no perceptive reason as to why they should perhaps have arrived on the furthermost western part of the EU. Of all the places in all the world, you end up in Connemara. Do you know?
Yes, I understand that. But I think really what we're saying here in terms of policy, what is required is a short-term, medium-term and long-term strategy. processing people quickly, ensuring that people are dealt with efficiently and effectively. A plan to clear Mount Street is just that. It's a plan that will last for a day. It plays into the Ireland is full gang, and I don't think it's a good look. Really, what I'm saying is we need a sensible approach to politics and immigration. And in terms of the UK and Ireland having a public spat about it, the reality is we have two sovereign nations that are intertwined, whether you like it or not, intertwined by history and politics, the common travel area, the Good Friday Agreement, mutual voting rights. And we need a sensible grown-up approach to say, how are we going to deal with this now and into the future?
OK, now, when we got the invitation from Rishi Sunak to join the Rwanda scheme, what was your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, he was trolling. He was playing to his base. There was a little bit of schadenfreude there, wasn't there, saying Ireland's difficulty can now be England's opportunity. He was smirking. I mean, I wouldn't take it seriously. I don't think anyone really took it seriously. Remember, this issue has been the front page of the Daily Telegraph for five of the last 7 days. They're enjoying what they believe to be uncomfortableness in Ireland because of Brexit and because of the fallout of Brexit. Well, let them have their moment of smirking. But the reality is grown-up politics will have to take over. Grown-up politics will have to say we are near neighbours. We must cooperate. We will have to have some sort of mutual agreement. We will have to build a system that can process claims quickly, efficiently, find accommodation. The response that we have at the moment is chaotic from the UK and the Republic of Ireland. And I think migration will be one of the defining divisive issues of the 21st century. We are witnessing the largest movement of people across the world since World War II, and embracing radical agendas, playing into radical agendas that are being controlled outside of Ireland, outside of the UK, makes it much more difficult to find efficient, effective solutions to this.
I'll come back to you on what the particular issue is in Dublin and how we might address it in a moment. John, you wanted to join.
Yeah, I think Deirdre is absolutely right. Rishi Sunak's policy is one of what I would call performative cruelty. It was all about electioneering before the local elections. It backfired spectacularly, and about positioning for the general election because they've burned everything else down. They've got nothing left to campaign on. And to show how ludicrous it is, Pat, the first person that they transported to Rwanda, which is on was on a voluntary basis, this isn't the involuntary scheme that begin in July, he scarpered with £3,000 of British government money.
He's
so they
gone.
Put him on a flight and he's disappeared. It just proves how completely ridiculous this is.
Where did he fly to? I mean, did he have a ticket directly?
No, he was flown, I understand, into Kigali
and then
last
vanished.
Week and then just simply vanished.
And this, £3,000 might go a long way in Kigali.
Indeed, or other adjacent parts. But I think Deirdre makes a very serious point that we really lost something when the UK stepped out of the European Union, the migration, the potential to control migration jointly. And the simple fact is that the two jurisdictions are going to have to cooperate on this. After all, we've operated a common travel area for almost 100 years now. It began in 1925. And most people would argue that it's worked well for both Britain and Ireland. Yeah. So, and I think there's a policy
so
in
do
Dublin
we need,
of waiting this out.
A joint policy with UK. We're not going to go sending people to Rwanda. There's no question. The optics of it wouldn't be right.
Certainly not.
The humanity of it would not be appropriate. So if we were to cooperate with the UK on migration, what would we do? I mean,
well, there's no chance we'll opt into any scheme like that. For one thing, the first person to be identified as being sent potentially to Britain, no matter what our government says in its legislation about UK being safe, they would go straight to file a case to the European Court of Rights, and it just could not happen. So I think it's important to remember that, again,
we did have an agreement, though, and over 200 people, 201 or whatever, were agreed to be sent back in the event nobody was sent back. And I'm still wondering why that did not happen. If the UK had said, oh, yeah, you've got a couple of hundred people there that came from us and should be really in our jurisdiction, we'll take them back. Mm. And we didn't send them back. Do we understand why?
I think part of the problem is that there is chaos, not just in the Home Office, as Deirdre pointed out, with thousands of people who should have been rounded up to potentially go to Rwanda just completely missing. We have evidence in Ireland that the Justice Department, similarly, just doesn't know where people are ending up. We have those figures for people who end up making claims in Mount Street. But what's to say that anybody coming over the border from Stranraer into Northern Ireland doesn't just arrive in Sligo or in Limerick to a body of friends and they start working in
the
black
economy? I'm sure that is happening.
That has to be happening.
That has to be happening. Deirdre, just going back to the specific problem, I mean, we had the tented village in Mount Street outside the IPASS office, and that was probably scandalising people who lived in the area trying to do business in the area, and the whole question of hygiene and health and all of those questions, which then the government decided to address by moving people out to Crooksling and other places. Meanwhile, a new tented village pops up along the canal, and the Taoiseach pains to say it's not quite the same as the one in Mount Street. It's only in a different place. It seems to be almost as numerous. But the questions people have is, why are we getting so many single males coming here? Why are they coming to Ireland of all places? What is the pull factor that we are offering? Is it the prospect of a job in an economy where we have full employment? Is it the prospect of avoiding the Rwanda expulsion scheme in the UK? Why are they coming here? I mean, as I say, of all the gin joints in all the world, how'd you end up in mine?
Well, I think it is important to say at the outset that it's okay to discuss these issues. It's okay to discuss immigration. It's not racist to ask these questions. We don't have answers to those questions, which is interesting. We appear to have very little data. So, for example, when we were told that 80% of asylum seekers came from across the border, 80% of what exactly? Because that figure is being challenged. So it's very difficult to have a policy dealing with
that figure,
issue.
By the way, Deirdre, it went above 90% at the cabinet meeting. You know, there were people, including Micheál Martin, who was a bit sceptical about the 80% figure as revealed by Helen McEntee. And then at the cabinet meeting, Helen McEntee went further and said it was over 90%.
Yes, and I wonder how much of this is distraction politics. Oh, look over there. It's nothing to do with our failed policies. It's nothing to do with the fact that we haven't a clue what to do here. Let's blame the open border. Let's blame the big bad UK. Now, I'm not saying that they are not to blame. There is reckless cynicism from both governments here, and both have failed miserably. So from a policy perspective, first of all, you want to know exactly the answer to the question you've posed, but how many of the people seeking asylum does this represent? Where are they coming from? A good policy would have evidence to support how they're going to deal with it. We need to be aware of how diverse this debate is. We need to be sensitive, honest and strategic. And clearly that plan to clear Mount Street was not going to work. And unless we build a system that is credible, that works, then we are going to be dealing with this problem. And as I said earlier, we're going to be dealing with a huge amount of disinformation. We're going to be dealing with distraction politics. We know that Sunak's on a sinking ship, and the Irish government is not above playing politics either.
Yeah. But now Deirdre, how do you assess people and process them quickly? I mean, if someone arrives without an ID and they've got on a plane with an ID, and the short answer is always, well, it's the traffickers who actually go around the plane collecting passports, false passports they've given or false papers they've given these people. So when they get off the plane, they have no papers to give. Now, I'm not sure the traffickers are that busy. I suspect this is not the full story by any means.
No, I don't think it's the full story by any means either. And I think what we need to do is learn from other countries. We are not the only country dealing with this issue. We may believe we are, but we are not. How can we are in the EU? What can we learn from other countries within the EU as to how best to deal with this issue? The difficulty we have now is post-Brexit, the UK has left the EU. We remain it. We have obligations because we are a member of the EU. And as John has rightly said, we cannot put people in a position where they may end up in not a safe country. So all of this is about politics, diplomacy, learning from others, but actually having an efficient system that deals with asylum seekers and provides appropriate accommodation rather than having these tented villages that we are seeing.
But, before I go back to John on this, when you have people struggling to find accommodation, people who are gainfully employed in pretty good jobs and can't find a place to rent at an affordable price, so they're couch surfing on their pals' couches, or else they're living with mother and father long after they should have fled the nest. When you have pressures on our housing system like that and you say, let's provide comfortable accommodation for those coming in, humane accommodation and so on and so forth, how do you do that when the housing sector is under such pressure?
Well, what I would say is it's not one or the other, is it? I mean, I am assuming that the Republic of Ireland.
No, but the problem is now. Do you know what I mean? Building a block of apartments takes minimum, even if you have planning permission, is going to take 2 years. Putting up temporary accommodation, prefabs, and so on will take some time. It could be done, of course, and then there are things like shipping containers, which can be converted and have been in certain places to be very comfortable accommodation. All of these things could be done. Is that what we should be doing?
Well, I think if you look to other countries, that's what they are doing. But that doesn't mean that you ignore domestic politics and you ignore the concerns of people. And of course, people who cannot find housing, cannot get on the housing ladder, are looking and saying, oh, look over there. Look what's happening over there. I think there is a responsibility on this government to address, and any government to address, the housing crisis, because it is either number one or number two in any poll about concerns of the population. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that you cannot have an efficient, effective immigration policy, which quickly deals with people, which quickly decides, is able to work out who's entitled to stay and who is not, and what you do about it. The difficulty is we have people talking about years in processing.
We've
years
had people in the country whose decision. Children are grown, and it would be so unfair that the only language they speak is the one they've learned in Ireland. The only friends they have are the people they've learned to grow up with in Ireland, and to send them back to the African continent, for example, where they know nobody except maybe an elderly granny. That just is not on, and it doesn't happen, in fairness. But the question of rapid processing, John.
Well, firstly, we need to put this in context. If we look at the 14,000 claims processed last year here, it was about 1.2% of the overall claims in the EU. So we are not bearing a disproportionate burden. And even if we go up to 20,000 as projected this year,
it could be 30,000, close to the first 3 months, if we're talking about 7,000 plus.
I think it's much more likely it will land on about 20,000. But mm-hmm. that should be entirely doable. The reason that it's so problematic is, of course, we did take a disproportionately large number of people from Ukraine, many of whom, by the way, have gone back or are going back. And that in itself should be freeing up population. There's lots of space. There's lots of other things we could do on derelict housing, for example. Every village and town in the country has derelict properties, and government has made virtually no effort to bring them back into
public. But government has given grants for people. A house that's been derelict for 2 years attracts a very handsome grant. So it's
we
not to say they haven't been doing anything.
We should be going further, I think, in really negatively penalising people who are holding properties.
Can I just ask you both this, because the Ukrainian people, many of them going back, if there's employment to be had in Ukraine and where places are safer, although Putin is still raining rocketry down on top of the population. But there is a difference between housing families from Ukraine who were on the run from Putin's war to housing individual people of whom little is known.
Well, little is known of those families that came from Ukraine either. So no, but why should a single male from Sudan be considered any differently?
Because they are. That's the point. It's not that they should or shouldn't be. They are. If you've got a holiday home, for example, that is home to a Ukrainian family at the moment and they go back, the idea that you have 4 single males from, or 10 single males from Mount Street being put into that holiday home, the holiday home owner may not feel the same way about that.
They may not, but surely the first and most important point is these are our fellow human beings, Pat. That should be our point of departure. I just can't see beyond that. And when we inevitably arrive back at these questions of geography and colour and so forth, I think we inevitably end up on the same sort of pages that the radical right people want us to be on.
Deirdre, that question of where people come from, we know that, you know, certain countries were designated potentially unsafe are now safe countries. They've instituted a new system about Nigeria as the most populous number of migrants coming, and therefore they will be processed first and quickest. What do you say to that? That kind of place of origin does determine the kind of welcome that's on the mat.
Well, I think we have to remember people are legally entitled to seek protection, and we have to be very careful around rhetoric, disinformation, misinformation, re-migrants, etc. We cannot dehumanise people. That does not mean at the same time you can't have a policy which identifies people that have a legal right to be here and people that do not have a legal right to be here, and have a system where they are returned quickly and efficiently.
But to where?
I think that's the
If they've come from the UK, for example, and I mean, on our programme, Barry White interviewed one particular migrant, I think from Africa, but who had lived so long in Scotland that he had a Scottish accent. Now, where do you send someone if it is deemed that person does not have a right to get asylum in this country? Where do you send them back to? Do you send them back to Scotland? And Rishi doesn't want them. And I'm sure the new First Minister, McSwinney, will not want them either. So what do you do? Do you send them back to Africa, not having lived there perhaps for a decade or more?
Well, it goes back to your earlier point. What you have is a system which does not allow people to be in the country for 10, 20 years without any effective processing, without any information about them, where they kind of languish in a system where they're not entitled to work. They're in no man's land. I mean, that doesn't work for anyone. So if we haven't dealt with this efficiently and effectively, it's time to really get a grip on it. And, you know, to say to send them back to the UK, we know that this is nonsense if the UK say we are not willing to take them. So it goes back to being part of the European Union and what we opt into and opt out of, but also then having a system with our near neighbours where we are cooperating in a sensible,
but it
logical
way,
grown-up.
It needs grown-up government in the UK for that to happen. Last question to you both. Were you surprised at the finding 50% of people said we should have border checks? 52% of Sinn Féin supporters, you know, the Four Greenfields, etc., United Ireland,
yeah,
52% of Sinn Féin want border checks.
That was the much more significant finding, if you attach importance to the finding. Yeah. I mean, I think it speaks to just the very nuanced views, Pat, that people have about this on both sides of the border. And certainly there is no automaticity attaching to a United Ireland. When the census result came out in 2021, a lot of people were saying, well, Catholics are finally a majority, everything is going in the right direction. But if you actually drill down into the data, there is much, much more nuance, even in what you might think might be established Republican circles like those that Sinn Féin are part of.
And your last words on this one, Deirdre?
Well, as you can imagine, that poll raised many eyebrows in the north, and there was a huge amount of schadenfreude amongst some people who said, oh, aren't these the people that argued for 6 years that we should have an open border? But I think really the question here is about how was this question framed? If you reframe the question another way and said, should border checkpoints be re-established, for example, you may have had a different question, a different answer. Yeah. But I agree with John. It's the nuance. It's not black and white. It's not I'm for this and therefore I'm not for something else. Yeah. People can hold two contrary views at the same time because we are human.
Yeah. If you were told you can't fill your tank in the cheapest jurisdiction or your Sainsbury's shopping is going to be inspected for booze on the way back, you might get a different answer. Thank you both very much for joining us. John O'Brien, Professor of European Politics at Maynooth University, and Deirdre Heenan, Professor of Social Policy at Ulster University. Thank you both very, very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.